Vancouver Walking is a new book of poetry by Meredith Quatermain. The poems offer us images drawn from walks along familiar Vancouver streets, intermingled with historical facts about people and places that have been long forgotten. Meredith Quatermain joins me in the studio this morning to talk about Vancouver Walking and to read us some selections from the book. Good morning, Meredith.
Good morning, Jane. It's just now, great to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you. You know, when I was reading the poems in the book, I just wanted to go out and walk along Francis Street and walk along Commercial Drive with the book in my hand, looking for all the landmarks that you were describing there.
Yes, well, if you did do that, you would see a lot of what I mention in that poem and in the other poems, too.
What got you started with the idea of bringing local historical references into your poetry?
I think Francis Street, which is not the first poem in the book, but Francis Street was the poem that really got me started.
It's the longest poem in the book.
I guess it is. Yes, it is. It's 15 pages long, I believe, or thereabouts. But I found out that Francis Street is one of the only two, I think it is, streets named after women in Vancouver. And so I thought, I'm going to research Francis Street. And I went down to the Vancouver archives, and I read up everything I could on Francis Street. And then, on the other hand, I would go for walks and write down what I saw on Francis Street, and the two came together, the archival research and what I saw.
You must have spent an enormous amount of time in the archives.
Well, you know, looking back on it, it seemed to be fairly short. I think it was a period of about a month.
Okay.
And, of course, what I had to do was find out about Sister Frances Redmond, who started St. Luke's Home, one of the early hospitals in Vancouver. But I also wanted to find out what other things were said about Francis Street as a street, you know, so I got into heritage matters and all this kind of thing.
I was so interested when I read in the book that Francis Street was one of the few streets named after women, and I was just like, this had never occurred to me.
I know, we forget. We just forget. But I started, and that I guess got me wondering, well, you know, what's Abbott Street? You know, who was Abbott? Who was Kiefer? You know, why is it called Hastings? Where did all these things come from? And there's this book by Tom Snyder that has, it's called Vancouver Place Names, or Namely Vancouver, I think is the actual title. And you know, that was an absolute gold mine for beginning to get information about who the characters were, and then I would go to other sources after that.
Now, in the book, you blend the experiences of working people with pronouncements and letters and laws from the leaders of society.
Yes.
Was it hard to find the information about the working people?
It's out there. You know, if you're alert to it, and I've always enjoyed library research, so for me it's not really difficult to go into the library and search for titles that appear to be directed towards working people and ordinary everyday people. And the material is there. There's some fabulous collections.
I want to give listeners a sense of the book before we talk more, and I want you to read from the first poem in the book, which is called Thanksgiving. It starts out near here, at Gore Street, near our radio station here. Can I get you to introduce that for us and then read a little from it?
Yes, I'll do that. Okay, the route that I take on this poem, many of these poems are about walks in Vancouver, and the route that I go on this poem is starts at the corner of Gore and Kiefer Street on some big rocks that are there. And if anybody's ever walked past that corner, I know they'll know what I'm talking about. Then I go down Gore to Hastings Street and down Hastings, and I get to Main, the corner of Hastings and Main, with the Carnegie Center on one corner. And across from it, the old yellow brick Ford building, and across from that, what used to be the Four Corners Community Savings Bank. And then eventually the poem circles back along Main and back up Georgia Street and to Gore. But, of course, it's a long poem, so what I'm going to read is only just a short section from it. it might be interesting to note that Gore Avenue was once a skid road for skidding logs down to the water. And
skid road is a road that was made of logs. Am I right?
I'm not too sure about the construction of the skid road, but I know that that Gore Street, which is on an angle. In relation to the other streets, if you look at it on the map, you'll see it's on an angle because it follows the track of what was originally just a logging road, just a road for getting the logs down to the water. So I found that interesting bit of history. You also hear about in this poem, you hear about the water birds on False Creek, and what I'm imagining there is the way False Creek used to be when it was a lagoon that went all the way up to Clark Drive.
No, I didn't know that it used to be a lagoon. I mean, I always thought False Creek, what is it that's false about it?
You will find out. It's used to go all the way up to Clark Drive. In other words, where the train station is now, the CN station, that was all water. And you can imagine full of water birds. So that's in the poem. You hear lots about Chinatown, about the markets and so on. And Tai Chi, the Chinese martial art, comes up with its couple of Tai Chi moves, brush knee, and four corners. They're both Tai Chi moves. And you hear about the Hastings Sawmill, which was run by Captain Stamp, and then later by Captain Raymer. And Captain Raymer was a bit of a philanthropist. So we now have a Raymer Street named after him and the Raymer Center. And he wasn't fond of some of the licentiousness that was coming up from below the border. So that's the kind of thing you hear in this poem.
Okay, well, let's listen to Meredith Quatermain now is going to read from Thanksgiving.
Okay, Thanksgiving. A girl in Ontario dreams of an ocean, so large it cannot be dreamed. Years later, she's at the edge of the Pacific. Gore Avenue, track of an old skid. Surveyor General of British Columbia ran from a true lagoon to a place between First and Second Narrows, the Spanish said people called Sassamat. No translation. Teals, widgeons, shovelers, buffleheads, scoters, redheads, golden eyes, blue herons, and the Branta canadensis, lagooned at Kawaasks, 2 points opposite, sawmills, sewage, shacktown, till the railways paved it over. A skid from Chartman Richards called it false, not a true creek. The Northwest Passage to Burrard Inlet, for his plumper, to pierce or wound, run through with a word spear. Gore Avenue and Kiefer Street, iron palings of Chowluin Tower, boulders hog size scraped up from an ice age. Sit here, ice in the butt, face in the sun, till the shadow of Fan Towers South slides across the page. Steady foot traffic, east side of Gore, gaunt black leather jacket long hairs down the skid to Hastings Street, lumbering, swaggering, stuffing things in their jeans, gnarled man waving his fist in, out, round and round his forearm, walking down to Lower Town. West side, new Chong Lung Seafoods, crowds of shoppers, shouts of the market men, a jade vendor, and the lady who crochets hats, tucked in doorways, cracks between buildings, their wares. People have lived here 10,000 years. Plump, a dozen fans open, brooms beating rugs, Tai Chi brush knee, cloud ears pile up a wall, black and curly, sacks of dried mushrooms, dried fish and shrimp, red roasted seeds, durian, prickly fruit, barbecue duck and pork, tanks of crabs, shellfish, a shiny fungus you see ledged out from trees that clouds here. Round the corner to the wide Hastings Street, Captain Raymer's mill, before that stamps. What is the meaning of this aggregation of filth? Barns of the mill, hodgepodge of lumber sheds, slag-heaped bark, steam donkeys, rusted carcasses, scrapped blades and rubber belting, sawdust spit clotting the sea. The mill workers, dogs, chickens, shithouses, shacks, gassy jacks, saloon and hookers. Civilizations, broken axes, saws, crockery, junked bottles, tins, boots, shoes. Death to American freedom, Raymer said. I'll not permit a running sore to fasten itself. Brought the workers books, a place to learn, maybe even poetry or Dickens. Started Gastown's first school, but named the mill for Rear Admiral George Fowler Hastings, Commander-in-Chief of the vessel Zealous.
It's just wonderful the way, it when you put it in context, then all these images start to float around in your mind of you're here, and then you're back in the past. And we won't, when we read the book, have you here to explain every poem. So you've included some information at the back of the book to give people some information about the references. Was it hard to keep that down to a manageable level? Did you want to put everything you'd found out in the back, or?
It was tempting, and I didn't put everything in the back. I'm not the only poet to do this kind of thing. There are others. It's not all that common, but it is being done. But I tried to hit the high points. You know, I mean, ultimately, a poem goes out in the world, and the world makes of it what it can and will. But I thought, well, here's a little help. You know, at least the reader doesn't have to rush off to the encyclopedia to find up everything in order to be able to understand some of the references.
I'm curious about how the poems developed. I'm wondering, did the history lead you to go walk down a particular street, or did the street lead you to go check up on the history?
I think most of my poetry was beginning to come through visual experience. So I'm a walker, you know, it's something I love doing. I like poking my nose in and looking at, you know, what I see as I go along, what's in this shop, what's in that. You know, and I would go for walks and I would record those in a journal. I would come back to it and think, okay, what is a little piece that I can develop from here? And history would be the natural way to give it some depth, some resonance, and you know, I would just let my imagination go. You know, what would I like to know? And usually it was, who was this? You know, some person became the anchor. But then I would find out other things. You know, what was housing like? Why do we have a Russian people's home, for instance? You know, where could we have gotten Russian people coming to this part of the world? Why would they have come? So Russian history, I go into Russian history, then I start thinking about, you know, the revolution and peasants being turfed off the land, and, you know, one thing leads to another, and pretty soon it's in there.
Was it hard to get the different elements to work together, the visual notes and the historical information?
Well, one has to feel it out. For me, it's a rhythm thing. I'm looking for rhythmic connections. They're usually strong rhythmic connections and sound connections of the sort of thing of rhyme or partial rhyme or stress patterns in the syntax and that sort of thing. So a lot of it was heard. And I would let that come.
So do you speak when you're writing?
To some extent, yeah. I try out the lines but you know, after you've been working in the medium for 10 years or so, you know, you start to develop little things, little tricks, little tropes that you can do. And so it's not hard for me, because it's what I'm doing, what I love doing is writing. So it's not hard in that sense. But yes, I do. It does take a long time.
It's kind of an interesting challenge.
Oh yeah, it takes time. I mean, writing takes time. It doesn't just flow. Contrary to the myth.
Yes. Now you're going to read from the first part of Walk for Beans, also set in the area, and I'm going to switch this around this time. I'm going to ask you to read first and then to talk about it afterwards so people can get a sense of the poem and then go back into some of the images.
Okay, let's do it. Walk for Beans. Head out across Campbell. He owned the sawmill with Heatley after Captain Stamp died in 1872. Head out to the Russian people's home. Cement block hall, no windows, a home away from home. What was home under Stolypin? Only themselves to hitch to plows, taxes and rent at 93%. Dung walls and dirt floor to share with pigs. Pay the squires for water. God is in each of us, the Dukhobors said, the spirit wrestlers. Tolstoy helped 7,400 head out in 1889 in cattle boats. 1911, no harvest. 1912, starvation. Kakotsov barred the charity groups. The foreign-owned Lena Company shot and killed 162 workers, striking for enough to eat. Head through the Raymer housing projects, brick barracks, yellow and blue walls, a la public swimming pool in small town Canada, pink metal railings, broken blinds. 1914, popularity and flags. 1922, misery and rags, the vets said. Shacks, floats, tents along the foreshore, mezzanines, cellars, rooms with no window, light, air, rooms 20 by 13 by 10 for six Chinese single men. Laundry, sign on a plank at a door. Repairing neatly done. 25 people per toilet, no bath, no shower. The rain came down in sheets. I saw the legs of a man disappear under a pile of rails. I stooped down, saw what seemed to be men sheltering there. Are there any soldiers? Yes, a bugler in Princess Patricia's Canadian Light Infantry. 13 more under the rails, 2 without boots. Prior Street jungle, crates, tar paper, corrugated iron, barrels, tea boxes, old Ford cars, made trails called Granville, Main, and Hastings Street. Water from a gas station, 1 privy, 400 men. Relief officer H.W. Cooper issuing 879 bed tickets for Pender Street Refuge and the old automobile building, Hastings Park. For 2 weeks, they stayed.
Where does that quote come from, the one that begins, the rain came down in sheets? Where does that come from?
That particular quote comes from Colonel R.D. Williams, who was a harbor master at the time that the Dirty 30s were going on, and even before the 30s, you know, in the 20s there were vets from the First World War and a lot of homeless people, the city was having major housing problems, and that particular passage I got from our first archivist's book, Major Matthews. I don't know if you know his work, but he was our first archivist in Vancouver, and he collected the voices and stories of a lot of people, and that was one thing that he collected from R.D. Williams.
Just when you walk around Vancouver now and around the areas where you did this work, does it feel different to you?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I typically walk by things and I say, and somebody will say, well, no, look at that. And I'll say, yep, it's immortalized in one of my poems. Yes, it does.
Well, what do you hope that readers take from your book?
I hope that they begin to see our city in a little bit different way. They begin to see that it's not just a big shopping plaza. It's actually marked, seriously marked with our history, with our colonialist history, and with the disparities and the social issues that seem so often to be hidden by consumerist culture. You know, I want them to look and say, well, you know, naming a street has a politics to it. It's a political act. And it's not just a benign, neutral place that we live.
It's been wonderful talking to you this morning, Meredith.
It's wonderful being here.
Thanks so much.
Okay.
I've been speaking with Meredith Quartermain. Her book, Vancouver Walking, was published last month by New West Press, and New West Press is spelt with one W.